The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody. It's me. It's Dr. Steve Pettirudi here with Shannon. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning.
How are you feeling today?
I feel great.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful day. You should feel great. Nick, how are you feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling pretty good,
now,
too.
Now, before we wrap up today's show, I'm going to give you my Patriots prediction. Now, bear in mind, I have been spot on throughout these playoffs. I probably should have been talking about this all along because my credibility would be much greater if I had told the listening audience that I picked New England and Atlanta. That wasn't a brilliant pick, but I'm going to tell you all about the game. I don't know if that has anything to do with your health, but maybe it does. Because as I mentioned last week, when your home team wins, there's a psychological boost throughout the entire countryside. You get happier. It boosts your mood. It's like a little shot of Prozac for everybody. Now, that means if we lose, perchance, and we're not going to, but should it happen through some freak event, Roger Goodell, watch out for Roger Goodell putting on a referee's outfit. He will be there in costume, throwing flags on Brady every time he moves. But other than that, they're going to win this game. But if they happen to lose, it's important for all of us to have an extra measure of joy and happiness toward each other just to compensate for the misery that will descend, because that will be a dark day. Well, we're going to hit a few topics today, Nick. You ready, buddy?
I am.
How are you feeling? What's new in your world?
New in my world is school.
That's
back
still
to school, the final semester. I'm trying to get back into it.
So,
a lot of adjustment.
Is your GPA above a 2.0, Nick?
Yeah, my GPA is actually about a 3.5.
You're a stud. Look, people, start sending checks to Nick, would you please? Maybe call Gina Raimondo. Maybe she'll give you a check. Say, Gina,
I wouldn't mind.
If you get like a full tuition for a 2.0, maybe you should get double the tuition for a 3.5.
I like that.
I give
That's
an
a good
incentive
idea.
Incentive for excellence. Gina Raimondo, please back down from your scholarship for a knucklehead program. 2.0 GPA to send a bunch of kids who really shouldn't be there to college so they can party on our dime while they take up space, absorb oxygen, and produce nothing. Here's the alternative. Get your pen out. I'm going to give it to you, Governor Raimondo. You can use it if you like. It's a scholarship for anybody that wants to come to Rhode Island. You must maintain a GPA 3.0 or greater, and you must stay in Rhode Island for 2 years after you graduate. What's the point of spending taxpayer money to cultivate talent if we don't then get the benefit of that talent? We're going to give scholarships for knuckleheads so they can all come out and line up to get a job at a fast food restaurant. That's what you do with a 2.0. I'm really tired of this scholarship idea not getting enough contemplative input. And this is a problem. When you throw the tablets down from the top of the mountain by fiat, you know, I'm sitting up there with my think tank buddies up on Smith Hill, and I have a great idea, and I announce it. Bang. Well, who'd you talk to? Who thought this was a great idea? You know, why not go out into the community and talk to the people that are going to write the check? So with that takeoff, because everything kind of connects here, folks, you know, public well-being, health, and lifespan. And by the way, today we're also going to be talking a little bit about liquid biopsies, about what's wrong with the state of cancer care and what can be made better. Now, there are a lot of things right out there in cancer care. I don't want to knock it all. And your oncologist and the doctors caring for you are wonderful, loving, and caring human beings, but they're limited in their ability. They do not have free speech, and I'll tell you about that. And if time permits, we may talk a little bit, Shannon, about arterial anti-aging. Right? You think about anti-aging, and what do you think about? Right? Big biceps, washboard abs, right? Okay, so enough talking about me. What I'm talking about,
God.
What I'm talking about, though, is anti-aging must go way beyond the mere appearance, right?
I would think.
You know, what do you care about as you get older? What do you fear in your agedness?
You know, the whole heart attack thing comes to mind, or not being weak.
So, physical infirmity.
Yeah, you know, your brain kind of
all important
memory.
So, We'll be talking a little bit about that. But, you know, an interesting thing was found out. They surveyed cancer, and what they found was that they noted clusters of cancer in geographic areas in an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Overall, the rate of death from cancer did go down a bit. But interestingly, they found hotbeds of cancer in certain areas, certain cities and locations. Now, think about that for a moment. If there are hotbeds of cancer that are geographically distributed, what does it tell us? Maybe cancer is more of an environmental event than a genetic one. Yes, it's a combination. Yes, you can be genetically predisposed by virtue of a weak immune system. But how about the environment? So let's talk about those power plants in Burrillville. I don't know if this is a done deal, but folks, we need to open up our mouths and try to stop this from happening. You know, the focus sometimes gets misdirected. Very quietly and very sneakily, this power plant is going to drop in your backyard, the most densely populated state in the union, and people are going to make crazy money cashing in on your health because they're going to be spewing cancer-causing, smog-causing pollutants into the air. Now, this may seem like a paradox, but I'm going to explain two elements here. One is that we need to get off of fossil fuel because it's killing us. And two, we do need to build pipelines. I know that sounds contradictory, but stay with me. When Alexander the Great wanted to crush the Persians, he did not have a navy, and the Persians had a great navy. The way he destroyed them was by taking his army and eliminating all of their ports of call. The Persians collapsed because their ships had nowhere to go. Now follow the logic. We need to crush all the production areas of energy that are using fossil fuel, including our homes and our vehicles. We need to choke the demand for fossil fuel at its end point. Then the suckers that are pumping it out of the ground are going to go broke and will pivot the whole economy over time. Now, what about pipelines? The Keystone Pipeline should be built, and here is why. That oil's coming whether or not there's a pipeline. And if you don't build a pipeline, it's coming by rail car, which is far more dangerous. So that is a fait accompli. What we should put our focus on is choking off the source, right? And now there's all of a sudden that Burrillville power plant magically went from 80,000 gallons of water it needed per day to 20 through some artificial manipulation. What's going to happen, mark my words, within a year or two of them opening up, they'll be back up to 80,000 gallons. And nobody will be watching. And instead of one or two trucks rumbling through Johnston, Johnston's mayor made a moronic decision, giving away the water for the privilege of having more diesel-spewing trucks clogging up the roads of Johnston. They're going to go from 2 to 10 to 12, and nobody's going to notice because it'll be a done deal, and the money will disappear. How am I doing over there, Nick? I'm okay? All right. Hey, we need to talk a little bit about the homelessness and this tragedy that is occurring in our midst. It's a threat to our health, a threat to our culture, and it is inhumane. Folks on the street are more prone to tuberculosis. Did you know there is now a strain of tuberculosis that is resistant to all drug therapy? Folks, TB is not gone. It's still amongst us, and it's disproportionately present in the homeless. Why are they on the streets? You know, if there was somebody in a cardboard box lying on a street in the middle of Barrington, I don't think it would last. Main Street, East Greenwich. We have street people down there, Shannon? I didn't check.
Never seen one.
Then why are they all clustered in Providence? Folks, this is a statewide concern. And why is the governor and the mayor not all up in arms about it, trying to solve this dilemma? Why do they ignore it? It suffers. Now, we're giving away millions of dollars to attract these businesses to Rhode Island, right? Millions of dollars so that people can step over the street folks that are urinating on the street, defecating on the street, interfering with commerce, and are a threat to themselves. This is inhumane. You wouldn't let a dog be on the street. So Joe Paolino is attempting to do something about it. Why do we need a private citizen to step into this void? Why is the mayor up there sitting on his hands doing nothing about those street people? Does he not have the creative energy? Does he not have the desire or the will to help them? You know, there's a combination of things that can be done that'll solve this problem. One of them is you need to make a resource where they can go. You can build a facility, a place, and expand the services that are out there. If we can give $12 million to corporations, we can take care of our citizens. Then you need to get them off the street, folks, and that's going to require a little bit of prodding. You know, in some areas, it is illegal to sit or stand or sleep in public. It is illegal in some places to urinate in public, to defecate in public. It is illegal in some places to store your personal property in public places. Why don't we have these types of laws in Rhode Island?
I always wondered that.
Why don't we
have them? I think, isn't that illegal? I thought they weren't allowed to do that.
It can be so, you know, if they had the political will. All it requires to solve this problem is political will, a little bit of capital, and vision. And right now, the mayor of Providence, what's his name? Mayor
Elorzo
is not manifesting any of those key attributes, nor is Gina Raimondo. Folks, wake up and get at it. Why is Joe Paolino the man? We'll be back, folks. I'm Dr. Pederuti, solving social ills. When we come back, we'll be talking about breast cancer, liquid biopsies, and keeping you alive till 120. I am Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. Hey, gang, we are back. Dr. Steve Pederuti at Intellectual Medicine here with Shannon and with Nick. So, Shannon, New England Tech, top 10, 8th in the nation, ranked by U.S. News & World Report for the best online bachelor's program. I was impressed and surprised.
I would say I was, too.
Yeah, I got to tell you, they're up and coming. I was very very well pleased with that ranking for them. You know, it's pretty cool. They're right in our backyard. They have over 3,000 students. Congratulations to New England Tech. And congratulations to Mayor Fung, who's attempting to do something about panhandling in the city of Cranston. He is attempting to corral the behavior in a manner that prevents it from being a risk to motorists. And he's getting some pushback from people that think that that's the wrong thing to do. You know, they have a very interesting program in Albuquerque where they approach panhandlers and offer them a job through day labor. And they will give them a day job and pay them minimum wage, or actually it's above minimum wage, and they could take them off and do some work. I think it's fabulous.
It's a great idea.
You know, why don't?
I mean, they have the time.
They have the time. We need people to work, and it's a savings to the community and a benefit to the individual. I can't imagine anybody likes panhandling.
No, you know, standing there 8 hours.
It's got to just destroy your dignity on some level. Not good. Well, listen, folks, we were talking about liquid biopsies and about cancer, and I'd like to continue that conversation. I mentioned how much respect I have and admiration for my oncologic colleagues. Here's their problem or their limitation. They do not have free speech. They must talk within the boundary of the club, the institution. So I had a patient of mine, and she went over to Germany. She had stage 4 breast cancer. And she was told to get her affairs in order. And she decided to try another tact, and she went over to Germany and did intensive vitamin C intravenously along with other therapies. And her cancer receded by half. Her nausea went away. Her energy returned. Her appetite returned. She came back to the United States and then engaged us, and we started to continue her treatment. What we needed was an oncologist willing to prescribe chemotherapeutic regimen in a manner different than is traditionally done. You know what? We couldn't find one. And the oncologist said to her, you know, this probably works and it seems safe, but I can't do it because the institution I work for would not allow it. It's frowned upon because it is not the standard of care. Let me tell you, folks, if you're fighting cancer, unless you can be guaranteed of a cure, you need something that's not the standard of care. Too often the standard of care is to watch the ship sink slowly while the body involutes. Now, there are three levels, that we need to attack cancer. One, primary prevention. That means when you're healthy, or in the moment of temporary health, as I like to call it, you do things that are going to make you more resilient. And that includes identifying carcinogenics that are surrounding us and in our body. Check those heavy metals. Do you have cadmium in your body? Is there lead present? If so, it can be addressed when you're healthy. If you're excess in your weight, if you're overweight, get that treated. You know, we have that cure, the Intellectual Medicine Centers. We're one of the few that have actually solved this problem. More people, more doctors are starting to join our movement, and it is spreading. So they're out there, and you can find us. And then we got to breathe clean air, and we've been talking about this intermittently throughout the show. Unfortunately, there's not much clean air to breathe. We have no choice about that. But we can make our internal environment better. Now, folks, if you want to join this conversation, you can chime in at any time. We do have availability to take your calls on these or other topics. Nick, what number do they call here?
438-9776, or the toll-free number is 1-800-321-WPRO.
There you go. Thanks, Nick. Back to the liquid biopsy. So here's a common scenario. An individual has had cancer, has been treated with chemotherapy, maybe surgery, and is declared cancer-free. They're set on their way with periodic imaging, you know, CAT scanning. Let's see if the cancer comes back. Here's what's missing, folks. Secondary prevention. We know that individual's prone to cancer. We know that cancer, in most cases, it never really goes away. There are things called stem cells. These are the progenitors of cancer. And they hide in the body, and there are only a few of them, so they can't be detected by any imaging at all. And they quietly go about their business, slowly dividing. And when your guard is down, when your immune system is weak, when you're tired, when you're stressed, if you fly in airplanes frequently, they emerge. The problem, it happens too often, somebody's 10 years post-cancer and wham, here it comes back with a vengeance. Here's why that happens. Because a cancer quietly divides. By the time conventional imaging, such as CAT scanning or even MRI, can see that cancer, it's about a centimeter in diameter, which means there are trillions of cells in that centimeter nodule, and it has been dividing 30 times to get to that point, and you're on the cusp of explosive growth. In addition to that, those are cancer cells that have likely already been exposed to some type of chemotherapy. They're more resilient. So here's an avenue that could be considered. You know, science moves faster than conventional medicine. Conventional medicine is propelled by financial interest as much as science. Sad but true. And we'll tell you a story about that in a moment. So the cancer cells are evolving. We now have the ability to test your blood and determine if there are cancer cells floating around in your blood that can be a threat to you in the future. It's called a liquid biopsy. We do have it available at our center. Now, we can do that specifically because we are not part of mainstream medicine. Yes, I'm board certified in family medicine. Yes, I'm a regular doctor. Yes, I'm board certified in weight loss as well as anti-aging therapies. And oh, by the way, everybody, Shannon is board certified as a nurse practitioner as of Thursday. Congratulations, Shannon.
Thanks.
That's a pretty big deal.
That is a pretty big deal.
Well, you know, we'll come back to that in a moment. I want you to tell our listeners in a moment about nurse practitioners, you know, what they can do and how they're equivalent to docs in many ways. Anyhow, back to the liquid biopsy. So now we have the ability to do this liquid biopsy. You know what? If you have some cancer cells floating around, you don't need to go back on chemo. We have the IV vitamin C that is toxic to those cancer cells. The problem is you cannot stay on chemo because it'll kill you. Cancer is a chronic relapsing disease that requires post-treatment care to prevent it from coming back or to diminish the probability of that happening. And that includes application of scientifically validated, evidence-based treatments and support to fight that cancer. Now, when I say scientifically valid, that means there's proof of its efficacy in the laboratory. There's not always evidence-based outcomes in patients. That evidence is very hard to acquire and is often used as a criticism as to why you should not consider doing this. I say that's nonsense. The reason there's not the studies is because vitamin C is generic. There's no drug company making money off of it. Consequently, folks, you will never see that evidence, but it's out there. It's out there for those who are interested in finding it. Liquid biopsies, in my view, should be a part of every cancer patient's post-cancer care with the option of ongoing intravenous vitamin C on a regular interval. So as those cancer cells are dividing and attempting to gain a toehold, you can kill them without harming your own body and put them back into the place where they belong. That's the magic of intellectual medicine. It's taking the science that's out there and bringing it in here right now in your backyard. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about money in medicine and how it sneakily can affect decisions. But first, it's Doug Lizette. Morning, Doug. How are things out there in News World?
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM. WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
That's right, folks. We are the voice of intellectual medicine. We are unbiased. We are unbought. And we are protecting you as best we can with information that you can use. We were just talking about liquid biopsies. You know, Shan, you would think that liquid biopsies would be wildly popular and would be promoted, paid for by insurance, and utilized.
I would think.
Here's the problem, though. They don't know what to do with the result. If you have a few cancer cells floating in your body, well, you're not going to roll up your sleeve and get chemotherapy. It's too toxic. And conventional medicine has neglected vitamin C for 30 years. They've also neglected alpha lipoic acid, both of which can have enormous value when it comes to supporting your own health and directly fighting many forms of malignancy. And the beauty of that is it can do it without doing any harm to your body. Now, if you've got a chronic disease state, you need a chronic therapy, correct? I mean, if you have high blood pressure, you're not going to treat it for 2 months and stop, right?
Right.
And our model for this really is the way they've been treating HIV in some cases, where it's a persistent presence. And that's what happens, you know, in the world of cancer. Now, those liquid biopsies are available, and they can help guide us. There's an effort to choke free speech, and it's a bit insidious. Oftentimes, it takes on the guise of trying to protect you, the public, from information that you can't handle because you're just too dumb. So they go after doctors and providers that may be doing things that are not considered standard of care. Well, you know, there's a positive element to standard of care. Clearly, there are things that are worth doing when it comes to health care, and clearly there are things that are at risk. But there's a huge gray zone out there, and that requires the application of intellectual thought, free speech, and free choice. Sometimes they forget that you are the captain of your ship, that it's your prerogative to decide how you want to go about living your life, what treatments you choose, and those that you don't choose to pursue. Now, here's one of the ways that they can co-opt language. I'm going to tell you about the trail of money. One starts with hepatitis C. So I was at Waterfire. Remember that, Shan?
I do.
And they had a big thing going on, and it was C is for Cure sponsored Waterfire. And it was an awareness on hepatitis C and the fact that you should go get tested because you could have it. And there's a cure for it now. There's a treatment for it. Well, that was sponsored, folks, by HepsiHope.com. HepsiHope funded C is for Cure at Waterfire. And that night, all the political dignitaries, including the head of the Department of Health, were lined up to be recognized at this night that was paid for by HepsiHope.com. Well, who funded HepsiHope? Gilead, a company called Gilead. And what does Gilead make? A drug called Harvoni. And what does Harvoni treat? Hepatitis C. Can we connect the dots here, people? Are we that dumb? Are they not preparing the ground for this imposition of a state-mandated treatment for Hep C? I can see it happening. If not mandated, they're going to want it to be state-funded because the drug is crazy expensive. Now, let's go forward. A recent study by the Institute for Safe Medicine Practice found that people treated with drugs like Harvoni had 524 cases of acute liver failure. One-third of them died. 1,000 cases of severe liver damage. So if you get a blood test and the doctor says, oh, you have Hep C, without symptom, there is no disease. The mere presence of an abnormal blood test does not beget life-threatening treatment. Keep your eye on this ball, folks. Listen for the language that may be bought and influenced by companies like Gilead trying to buy good faith by sponsoring Waterfire. We care about public health. Oh, by the way, do you mind paying for this? It's about $10,000 per year, right? And we're going to help wipe out hepatitis C. Unbelievable. You know, money screams. And that's why we don't take any here. Do we have any sponsors yet, Chan?
We don't. Not yet.
We're not good at that, are we?
No.
All right. Well, listen, I do have a caller waiting. Steve from Warwick, thank you for being so patient. You're on Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pederuti.
Good morning, doctor. How are you today?
Feeling great, Steve. What's up?
Good. My question is, if someone had cancer and is operated on and is clean, they have this liquid biopsy and they're clean with that as well, do they still need the vitamin C infusion?
It's a great question. I wouldn't say that they need it, Steve. It's a great comfort knowing that there are no cells present. What we advocate for in that setting is an infrequent interval of vitamin C. By that I mean it can be done once every 3 months. Now, why would we recommend that if there are no cells actively present? It's because of the lifetime risk of relapse, Steve. You never know when those cells are going to start dividing. If the liquid biopsy is negative, it's very reassuring that there are no active cancer cells floating around in your body. It's got a high sensitivity. But there could still be a couple of stem cells buried in there. I mean, we're all aware of patients, sadly. We're all aware of patients, women that have had breast cancer, and 10, 15 years later, it explodes back on them. People that have melanomas, and then 10, 15, 20 years later, it explodes back on them. The problem is you don't know when the cells may start to become active. So what we advocate, Steve, is it helps guide the recommendation. What we want is an intervention that can support your health, prevent cancer relapse, is affordable, and is not a nuisance to execute. So knowing that, for instance, certain cancers have a very slow doubling time. Prostate cancer, for instance, very slow doubling time. So you don't need to have an infusion of vitamin C that often because the cancer itself moves slowly. And we have some pediatric patients in the practice who have very aggressive forms of malignancy. And, you know, they're doing it every couple of weeks. So
what about esophagus cancer? Is that a slow cancer too?
That's pretty aggressive, Steve. And that's another one that is this something that you've recovered from, Steve?
It's not me. It's a family member.
Yeah. Esophageal cancer is the problem with esophageal cancer is that the lining of the esophagus is very thin, and the cancer cells don't have to go very far before they can disseminate throughout the entire body. It's an aggressive cancer. It has a fairly high relapse rate. So that is one that even with a negative liquid biopsy, I would advocate an ongoing support structure, Steve. There's not enough emphasis applied to supporting the patient's immune system and to looking at the reasons why the cancer landed on them in the first place. Folks who have had cancer are at risk for another cancer, another primary, because they've already manifested a weakness and a vulnerability. So we look at that holistically and we'll say, yes, there was esophageal cancer. Now let's watch out for lung. Let's watch out for pancreas. And you can't do it by chasing these images, Steve. The CAT scans are not sensitive enough. That's one of the points. And we know there are certain supplements combined with certain elements of healthy living that are going to make you stronger, make the patient stronger, make them more resilient. You know, one of the greatest risk factors for cancer is advancing age. And that's for two reasons. One, accumulation of toxins. And by the way, esophageal cancer is largely a cancer triggered by toxic exposure. It is not a genetic cancer. And number two, it's because of the weakening immune system that happens over time. So, you know, Rhode Island, we're the ground zero for cancer. We have one of the highest rates in the country. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the surrounding pollutants that we have. Well, Steve, I hope that answers your question about the liquid biopsy and how we use that information to help guide treatment. This is intellectual medicine, Steve, and it means that we've got to think about what we do. We have to know something about the background of the treatments and the cancers and apply it in a manner that is balanced. You know, here's what you want to be on the guard for. It's sometimes known as disease fear-mongering. You know, I was just talking a moment ago about hepatitis C, where a clinician would say, oh, my goodness, you know, you've got this, and you need to come here every day for the next 5 years, and it's going to cost you $1 million. Now, that type of approach adds stress and makes patients less healthy. So we want to have that type of balance. So folks can always call our office. Shen, what is our office number anyhow?
Our number is 401-921-5936.
Hey, Steve, thanks for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in.
Thank you, doctor.
You bet. So what else is on the agenda? We promised we would protect you folks, and we will. When we come back after our next break, I'm going to tell you three things that are at risk for you in conventional medicine that you're doing probably right now and we're going to help protect you, because that's our mission here. We want you to live to be 120. I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. We'll be right back. All right, folks, we are back. I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. I'm here with Shannon, a newly minted board-certified nurse practitioner. How's it feel, Shan?
It was great to be done.
Yeah. How long did it take?
3 years.
Wow. Well, but prior to that, there was some training involved, too, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, you have to become a nurse first.
So after you become a nurse, you do 3 years of nurse practitioner training. And in the state of Rhode Island, that gives you the same privileges, really prescribing privileges as a physician, doesn't it?
Same authority. Yep.
So you can hang a shingle and you can go out and practice medicine if you wanted to.
I can.
That's pretty exciting. Folks, it's the wave of the future. Nurse practitioners will be taking over primary care, and that's a good thing in many ways. You know, they're very empathic, they're well-trained, and they are available. So they're going to be out there. And, you know, I kind of like aspects of your training. It was a lot more enlightened, I thought, less dogmatic than some of what I experienced in my medical training. Didn't you think so?
I'm not sure. I didn't go through your medical training.
Yeah, as you were going through your training, though, there were, as we spoke, there were elements of it that were kind of more progressive, I thought.
Well, yeah, I would think so.
So we promised we would protect you folks, and we are. One out of three people diagnosed with asthma on subsequent studies were found not to have the diagnosis. That's one out of three when they were subjected to definitive testing. Frequently, when faced with a patient who is wheezing, a doctor will label it as an asthmatic event and start treating it. Now, if you have the wrong label, it can send you down a pathway of challenged treatments. That is, more steroids, more inhalers, when it may be that they're missing the actual etiology of that which is causing the wheeze. Other things can cause wheezing, including heart disease, including acid reflux, including anxiety and stress can create spasm of the larynx and cause wheezing. The point here is if you've been labeled asthmatic and you have not had definitive breathing testing, usually performed by a pulmonologist or a primary care doctor with advanced training, then you want to at least consider getting that performed. And this, folks, from the American Journal of Epidemiology, an increase in hearing loss with use of Tylenol or nonsteroidals. Either one of those used on a chronic basis can interfere with your hearing. Now, an occasional Tylenol for pain, an occasional Advil for pain is reasonable. But we've been talking about this periodically. The regular use of such drugs are harmful to your health. Not only can they cause problems with your hearing, but we know that nonsteroidals can increase the risk of heart attacks. We know they can increase the risks of gastric bleeding. And we know they can damage the kidney. These drugs need to be used cautiously, if at all. And if you're battling chronic pain, a more balanced, a more complete approach to it is certainly worth considering. Now, we've had great success putting people on low-dose naltrexone in the practice. It's an interesting treatment, folks. Naltrexone is a drug first designed to treat drug addicts. It blocks the endorphin receptor and prevents the person using the drug from getting euphoric when they take the drug. So it blocks the receptor. The prescription dose of naltrexone conventionally is 50 milligrams. When it's used at a low dose level, 1.5 to 4.5 milligram, it partially blocks that receptor in a manner that causes your body to make more endorphins. Now stay with me here. Those endorphins are therapeutic. They reduce inflammation, they reduce pain, and this treatment has had significant benefit to patients with fibromyalgia, chronic back pain, really chronic pain of any sort. Low-dose naltrexone, you can certainly Google it. If you Google LDN, you'll come up with a lot of information. Now you need to find someone willing to prescribe it. That's certainly something we do in the intellectual medicine world. Low-dose naltrexone, in addition to being great for these other conditions, has none of the side effects that are associated with common drugs for fibromyalgia, such as fatigue and weight gain. In fact, low-dose naltrexone is an enhancer to immune function in a way that can help fight cancer. And it is, in many cases, part of the recipe that we use when it comes to treating or to helping patients fight cancer. And finally, from the supplement front, Shannon, do you use fish oil?
Oh, no. I should. I know. It's just so big.
The mere thought of it.
It's just huge. The capsule's big.
It is big. They do make liquid forms, though. We should.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
Have I been holding out on you? Oh. You didn't know that. All right. We're going to get some liquid. The capsules are big.
I know.
Well, all right, folks. Here's the problem with fish oil. First, it can become rancid. That is, it can oxidize. Fish oil should be stored in a refrigerated space. At our center, we keep it refrigerated until it's dispensed. If you go to a big box store and you grab some fish oil off the shelf, it's like grabbing a salmon that's been lying on the shelf at room temperature. It's going to stink. It's going to be rancid. Open the lid and just put your nose in there. Yikes. That is not something you want in your body, folks. You know, the problem with supplements is quality control in many cases. What we need and what you need, if you're going to use fish oil, pharmaceutical grade. It's got to be pure and it's got to be fresh. Now, what they found about fish oil, did you know, Shan, that it actually helps children with attention deficit?
I did.
And small but significant effect was found. No side effects, by the way. No side effects. Now, I'm not suggesting that you can rely fully on this, but there's absolutely no downside to it, and it can complement usual medical treatment. So for attention deficit, studies have proven benefit. The babies of mothers who took fish oil when they were pregnant were found to have a more fortified immune system. They were also found to have a lesser rate of asthma. Low blood levels of omega-3, the fat that's in fish oil, correlated with lower cognitive scores and increased brain lesions in adults. The omega-3s that are in fish oil, DHA and EPA, look for those too. Not all fish oils are created equally. You want to look at the label and specifically look for the amount of DHA and EPA. Combined, they should be greater than 1,000 milligrams. Sometimes the label will say 1,000 milligrams of fish oil, but you read the fine print, and those two omega-3s will be rather small in their representation. Those are protective of brain and of heart, and now we're seeing this evidence that it may have benefit with regard to brain function and brain anatomy. In folks with low levels of the omega-3 in their blood, they were seen to have brain lesions, some of which are consistent with a risk for dementia going forward. So those are a few things that you could take with you as you go about your journey in life, folks. Remember, intellectual medicine is out there for you. It requires you to be a participant. If you live life like everybody else, you're going to get old and die like everybody else. Now, I'm not suggesting immortality can happen, but I am telling you, you do not need to wither. You can stay strong and vital. And if you're struggling with weakness, we can help revive you and restore what's been taken from you. Live long, and live strong. That's part of our motto at Intellectual Medicine. So, Shannon, any other thoughts as we wrap it up today? What do you have on tap for the day?
I still have to get my workout in.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of living long, see, I already did my workout this morning. How about you, Nick? You going to hit the gym after?
Actually, not today. I got to sleep a little bit, and then got to go to Boston tonight.
Well, before Tony DeJesus from Big Blue Bug comes on board, I did promise you my Patriot prep pick. Now, folks, you want to tune in early because this game is going to be a washout. This Patriot team is one of the greatest. It's a team for the ages. We'll be ahead by 10 points by the end of the first half. By the end of the third quarter, it will be a done deal. So enjoy the first half. I will see you in the future. I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine.